just do a Google search, QUT eprints, or aupsi.org. It's not actually linked through to aupsi.org at the moment, but it will be shortly. Yeah, you can have them. I just put them while we're sitting there.
Hi, everyone. I'll talk to you about our New Zealand implementation, which has really benefited from this Australian work. We've been so lucky to have Anne and Brian and the rest of the team just across the ditch, and we had this very serendipitous meeting when the Creative Commons New Zealand Law licences were launched.
Bob, Bob,
oops. How's that? It fell down. How's that? They were launched in October 2 years ago, and that's when Anne and I met, and we've had this great collaborative ANZAC experience since. So thank you very much. So the New Zealand Government Open Access and Licensing Framework, NZGOL, is our version of the Australian AGILF, except we've taken it further. We've picked up on access to non-copyright information as well, and that's a clear difference for which we've received a lot of acclaim actually. So we were very pleased to do that, and that extension really arose from a session we held at the SSC February last year, when some people here were at that session, and that discussion was held about why copyright. Why not just have all information in the public domain? And it became very clear that we needed to cover non-copyright information as well in our work. So that's what it does, and the focus is on reuse of non-personal government information. So we're not looking at personal information in any way. And its expectation is that it will, when approved, be a recommendation to state services agencies. So that's wider than the public service. It covers Crown Research Institutes, which are one of the key areas of information which we are wanting to make available for reuse. So there's the slide that Lawrence had. So that's the link to it there. It's rather than it's such a long URL, it's at the e.gov.nz site under the heading policies, and then there's a subsection information and data, and you'll find it there. And it's still in draft form. It was released in August last year, and that was for a round of feedback from the wider community. We had, prior to that, released a discussion paper to government departments where we had proposed that based on the international research and the experience in Australia, particularly in Queensland, that Creative Commons be the open content suite of licences that we adopt for New Zealand. And that discussion document was well received. We had about 19 responses from government departments, and based on that, we released this draft for wider feedback. And what are we talking about just in terms of reality? It's just a tag cloud that's looking a bit old now, which I've used probably too much and probably need to change. But it just gives you a feel for the very wide ranges of government-held non-personal information that we are wanting to be licensed, have clear licensing arrangements when it's a copyright work. And if it is that information which is excluded in terms of the New Zealand Copyright Act, that it has a no known rights statement. So you'll see types of information that's relevant to your particular worlds there, I'm sure. Maybe not, what was it? Dog decisions. So they're within the state services, CRIs are. So we will be recommending that they adopt it. And our hope is that the argument for adopting it is so compelling that they will feel feel that there is value in considering them. And some CRIs are releasing information under Creative Commons licensing already. For example, NIWA, their climatological information. And they've already expressed, released interesting results from that, that the usage of that information has gone up markedly, and it's been used quite broadly, quite internationally, particularly in the academic sphere. I suspect that it's had a different range of usage than might have been feared by those who didn't want to reduce it using a Creative Commons license. So the purpose of the NZ goal is very high level, and Lawrence referred to it earlier, to bring about creative, social and economic benefits for the people of New Zealand, and also to foster greater transparency of government agencies' performance. So there's both a widening access to public information, public sector information, government-held, taxpayer-funded information, plus a open and transparent government purposes there. And I'll just read to you the comment that we received from the Council for the Humanities, who administer the New Zealand Creative Commons licences, when they responded to that discussion paper I referred to, which seems to me to really to have it be a very clear statement of our purpose for this work. Now more than ever is there a very present need to bring information the government holds on behalf of its people into the public domain so that it may be used in ways that stimulate innovation, generate cultural creativity, social interaction and dialogue, while also kick-starting economic growth. Now, something I failed to say when I talked about the document, it was prepared jointly by the State Services Commission and the Department of Internal Affairs. Over this last 2 years, we've had changes at the Commission, and the person, Richard Best, our legal advisor, who worked very cleverly and actively on this work, was one of the staff who transferred to the Department of Internal Affairs. So it's a collaborative project with them. And I want to thank him for his wonderful work. So Anne's referred to the drivers for Creative Commons, and I'll just highlight what the drivers were for our work when we started it. There was confusion here in New Zealand about copyright, about Crown copyright, and why you should license, how you should license, what you should license. And for example, in New Zealand, those Crown Research Institutes, their works are copyright works, not Crown copyright works, even though they have a title as a Crown Research Institute. There's a lot of confusion about copyright. And misunderstandings about why you should license it when you already have a Crown copyright statement. And as Anne says, this is the other hand of the deal. You're, on the one hand, you're protecting the copyright owner. On the other hand, you're being clear that the information will be licensed in the way that you, the copyright owner, wish to release it. Now, the policy settings, and Lawrence referred to the policy framework for government-held information, that and the web standards don't fully cover this digital online environment, nor more recent policy, international policy that's been developed with respect to reuse of government-held information. In 2008, the OECD ministers released a recommendation for the release of public sector information, and were quite clear that licensing arrangements were needed. And our policy framework doesn't cover licensing in that way. It only refers to copyright. We at the State Services Commission was receiving a lot of queries from people as to whether they should be adopting Creative Commons. They were seeing what was happening in Australia, so we were being asked for advice on what to do. We also were conscious of the initiatives, particularly the open data catalogue work here in New Zealand, where information was being released, and where they could, they were saying what license arrangements were attached to that information, but most of the government's information doesn't have those licensing arrangements there, so clarity is needed. And since the data.gov.nz has been released, those of you who've used it will see that there's a field there for giving the license information, and in most cases, like, what, 99% Rowan? That's empty. So there is a need for people to assign their licensing arrangements. And we've referred to the international developments. And also, there's is an opportunity for government taxpayer-funded information to be reused by third parties to create new business and add to New Zealand's economic growth, with taxation coming back to the government in the form of revenue. So those were the drivers. And that consultation I referred to, thumbs up. Everyone said, it's when can you get it finished, essentially. They probably still are saying that. We're doing our best. So in that document, we had said that our preliminary review, and Richard Best had undertaken a legal review of the New Zealand Creative Commons suite of licences, and assessed their applicability to the government, and he had recommended that the Creative Commons suite be adopted, and had consulted widely across the public sector lawyers fora also. So there's a set of policy principles. I won't take you through them all. They're all there. The key ones are that first one, the open access principle, which covers the non-copyright works. Unless a restriction applies, and I'll refer to the restrictions in a moment, state services agencies should provide online public access to non-copyright information and data that is or may be of interest or use to people. Allow them to copy and reuse such information and data without restriction, and include at the point of release a statement setting out what that license is. And you've seen today lots of examples of that Creative Commons license at the bottom of people's presentations. Now, just an example of non-copyright information, which is not that, which is in addition to that information excluded from the Copyright Act. Organisations like the National Library have a lot of information which may have passed its initial copyright period, but they may be not clear that there may have been other copyright restrictions placed on it by another country. So this is saying, say where you can, I'll just go down to the next slide, there is a known rights on this information. So that's saying you've done your very best to identify that this information is non-copyright material. Is that okay, Courtney? Yeah. The liberal licensing principle is the open licensing principle. So state services agencies should make their copyright works, which are or may be of interest or use to people, available for reuse on the most liberal of licensing terms available within New Zealand NZ goal. And that most liberal is the Creative Commons Attribution By license, which attributes the copyright owner and allows any form of reuse. Now, before people can decide to progress on that basis, they do have to look to whether there are restrictions that relate to their information. And there's a section within the document working through the various types of restrictions which might apply. Now, in our feedback on the draft document, there's been some suggestion that, crikey, you're actually trying to restrict rather than open access. But we'll have to make sure in the way we present the final document that it doesn't appear that way. We're just saying, as a government agency, when you, the owner of the copyright of this work which you are wanting to release, make that decision, you do have to see, and some key examples are, whether it might be contrary to legislation, court order, or specific government policy, constitute a breach of contract, breach of confidence, disclosure of a trade secret, etc. So we just work through that. And at the State Services Commission, we've been testing this restriction list, and so far we haven't had to restrict our usage in any way. So far we've released all of our material on that most liberal attribution license. Now the creativity principle says please take into account any adverse effect of stifling creativity and or economic exploitation by the licensees. So don't restrict it because you feel a little bit anxious. Just remember that the purpose of this is to stimulate creativity. And the non-discrimination is really picking on that also. It's saying don't distinguish between commercial and non-commercial use. The open format, I need to refer to you people. Agencies should also, to the greatest extent practicable, release the information, data or works in open non-proprietary formats. So that's the open format principle. Anne's mentioned DRN. We're discouraging charging, but states, agencies will have to look at the Treasury's guidelines for setting charges in the public sector. And there's guidance there which supports the principle of the policy framework, which looks to cost charging to cover the cost of dissemination. But there are specific charges which also you need to be aware of. And then when a document's updated, make sure you update it on your site. So that was the open access. There's the example of the license icon. This review and release process, there's a detailed six-stage evaluation that you work through, which looks onerous and isn't. And again, we have to see when we release the document in the final form where our advice and our guidance for everybody will have to be quite clear that it isn't off-putting. But we do have to go through, it is a legal process, we have to make sure that we go through it fully, thoroughly and legally. So just thank you to the Council for the Humanities who did that original work, bringing the Creative Commons licences into the New Zealand law. Our version is 3.0, we're ahead of Australia, and the UK are just looking at updating theirs at the moment, and they're all very envious of our working on the the latest versions. So next steps are to incorporate the feedback, and thanks to those who have provided feedback on this most recent round. The main interest has come from people who are trying to sort out licensing of data and this attribution stacking that Anne referred to. It is complex, and we're really, really very lucky to have the work that Anne and her team have been doing on working that through. And so the latest version will incorporate some clarity about attribution stacking. We have to develop our restrictive license. We're assuming that about 80% of existing material will be covered by the six licences, and there'll be a more work required on a restrictive licence. Again, the Australians have done one. We maybe at some point will do an Indigenous licence, but in terms of the final document, we hope to have it all signed and sealed by the end of this financial year with appropriate guidance, as I said. So, your slide again, Lawrence. Set your data and information free. Thanks everyone, and any questions?
Model that the CRIs have been set up, as I work for one, they're supposed to be, they try to be sort of self-funding to a certain extent, and so that means that if a manager sees some possible commercial value for some data, they will try to hang on to it. How will that work with trying to set the data free?
Yes, that's a good question and a very relevant question, and the other countries are having to grapple with it also. And the UK with the Ordnance Survey and their Meteorological Service have got exactly that same situation, where their revenue from their sale and maintains their business. And what they're doing there in the shareholders executive of the UK Treasury is sort of unwinding what is actually paid for by taxpayer funds and what is paid for by or maintained using that revenue. And we're looking to whether that is a first way for us to start, to sort of look at this hybrid information and see what's taxpayer funded, what isn't, and then work to see how that can enable the release of some information, as well as encouraging open access to New Zealand content, and looking at the examples of agencies who are doing that now and seeing if that has had different benefits than might have been anticipated. So it's ongoing.
Actually, if I could just add in there, in the research institutes, there's some really interesting stuff. I guess really the work that we've done in Australia and that Keitha has done here in New Zealand, we have tended to focus more on, I guess, stuff that would be regarded more as, like, I guess, you know, really core governmental kind of information. So in one way, you can actually separate out a little bit some of the issues that are involved with access to the research data that's produced in publicly funded research institutes. There's some active work going on at the moment. So whereas the work that we've been talking about really was very much influenced by work that was done internationally on access to PSI, public sector information, particularly by the OECD, there's yet another parallel OECD document on access to research data. And the implications of that are really just being worked through, I think, in more detail at the moment. There's obviously some more additional complications there. The United States has actually taken a pretty strong line on this with particularly the funding for a lot of its biomedical research through the National Institutes of Health, which has taken a really strong line on where it funds research. It expects the outputs of those research projects to, as far as possible, be made available. So not only the publications, but also the data supporting the scientific analyses. And as part of their open government initiative, they've had an online consultation that really is essentially still ongoing at the moment. I think it was extended out until around now on how they deal in the US with access to publicly funded research. So I think you'll see, if I'd say watch this space, whereas I think that as a matter of principle, the issue of access to, I guess, government-produced, you know, material, like standard government-produced material, that issue is almost like done and dusted now. The next one really is how we work out in practice how to deal with this, you know, the publicly funded research data. Yeah. So where there is actually stuff that may well have a real, you know, commercial relevance, particularly sort of, you know, to a patented invention or whatever. So working out how data that's required so that other scientists can, you know, like, I mean, investigate that data, use it, you know, to validate it, replicate the results, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of thinking about that going on right now. So in the US, as I said, the open government initiative, like, they've had an active online consultation over the last few weeks on this.
I think we have to stop. Colin, last one.
It's a very quick last question. Quick yes or no, really. Does NZGOL have the equivalent of the Australian, you know, in cases of breach, fallback to, you know, standard legal? I just don't recall.
We haven't got into that stage of the implementation in terms of identifying what, how that breach process would be. In fact, no, let's cancel that. I was thinking more in people not picking it up. The breach, that law, I don't know. I thought I must ask Richard what the story is with respect to our Copyright Act, if it's breached. I don't know the answer, and I will find that out. And if anyone wishes to know, please contact me. Thank you. Yes, I noted that.
Could I just say, before we finish, I've actually just got a couple of copies of the literature review that I mentioned. Just brought two copies with me, so if anyone wants a hard copy, you can download the whole thing online, but if someone would like a hard copy for their library or whatever, I've got a couple with me that I don't necessarily want to have to take back. So. Okay. I'm not going to throw it at you, though. It can be a bit heavy. Are there any other questions? Oh, we've got some.
Dan. It's on, I think.
Just on the commercial side of things, most of the research has shown that governments can actually make more money by getting the data out there and letting the private sector create businesses which they then return back to government in tax money than they ever can by trying to monetize that within a government department. What we've got is policy settings set 20 years ago when we were much more intentional on governments turning into trading enterprises, and the multiplier effect that you get from putting that data out just means we're going to have to recalibrate what we expect CRI, where we expect CRIs to get their money from, but getting it from selling data isn't the way of the future.
Thanks, Lawrence. And there's a question at the back. Yes.
And keep it brief if you could.
Just in short, I think that really what it did is essentially really very much validate the work that we had actually been doing here. So from the time when we saw on his campaign site he was using CC, then when he actually started using it and stating on in fact the entire approach taken on data.gov is what we had actually been advocating for here in Australia and New Zealand. So for us it was really a complete validation of the direction we had been going. And I guess it has made our task somewhat easier. I guess it's led to the acceptance of that approach of getting that data out there. As Lawrence has actually made the point very clearly, very well, you want to get the data out. Don't have government just playing around, you know, spending a lot of money creating expensive websites, trying to actually double guess what people want, get the data out there. So the approach that has been taken under with the data.gov site is very much what we have been advocating here.
Over to Jason.
Can I just thank? I just actually like to say thanks very much to the people who organised this. Pia War, I know, had a hand in it, and Daniel, because I think this was a really great idea. It was the right time to have a session like this. The one you had at the conference last year was great. This has been really, really useful. And I'd just actually like to say thank you very much and also give a little word of recognition to the people in New Zealand, Keitha in particular, her colleague who isn't here, the lawyer Richard Best, Lawrence Miller. The work that people have actually done in New Zealand has actually been really absolutely leading around the world. I think we can see now, you know, as we've just discussed, with the developments that have occurred in other jurisdictions, we can see that this was actually the right way to go. But I mean, we could do analyses of how public servants actually do this sort of thing, how you actually achieve change. What we've actually seen here is really, I guess, work which really exemplifies that. So if anyone wants to study how you get change, you know, in some of the other areas, some of the other technical challenges that are faced, just look at what these people have done here, because they really did make a lot of headway, you know, in the last couple of years. So, so thank you.
Give it up for Anne and Keitha. As Don mentioned when he introduced me this morning, my name's Jason Ryan. I'm the Manager of Communications and Records Management at the State Services Commission. You'll note from my tag that I'm a hobbyist. I'm here on my own time, but I think in this day and age it's absurd to believe that I can somehow compartmentalise myself, so I'm not going to disavow anything I say as not being commissioned policy. I'm just going to be careful about what I say. I'll get onto the self-destruct immediately. When I agreed to do this, I thought, yeah, how hard can it be? And as I said that, I had that voice in the back of my head go, oh, bad idea. And I couldn't quite work out why, and then I arrived here this morning and proceedings got underway, and I suddenly, the first thought of why it was a bad idea struck me, which was live stream, sort of Twitter, IRC, etc. It's all been digitised. There's no point me standing up here and doing the post-mortem. Everything's been said. That, however, turned out to be the beard. It wasn't really the bad idea. The really bad idea that was lurking behind the beard was the fact that I'm meant to stand up here now between you and beer. That was a bad idea. It was compounded by the fact that I'm standing at the wrong end of the room. The door's there. You're free to go. So all that means I'm going to keep these remarks very brief. I'll just recap a couple of points that I picked up through the course of the day and finish with an observation or two. I'll start with Andrew. He was fantastic, wasn't he? I didn't understand a word he said, but he was fantastic. It was like he was speaking in Klingon. And I started to realise it was a voice from the future. It's like in Star Trek where he's gone through some wormhole and he's talking back to us and he's sending us a very important message. We just have to decipher that message. I don't know what the message was, but there was some clues there. And one of those clues was when he started to talk about the fact they've released 1,275 data sets available to 2,400 developers. And I thought at first, geez, those developers are sort of overwhelmed with data. And I thought, no, those fiendish bastards, they're hacking away and they're going to create Skynet. That's the message he's come back from the future to tell us. He also started to tell us about how this whole open thing was going to lead to public sector reform. And I think that's one of the key things I've taken away from today, and I'll touch on that when I get back to the observations. Then we had Lisa Harvey, who, in my mind, as I was sitting there sort of frantically trying to think about what I was going to say, I was starting to think, oh, hang on a sec, Star Trek, Skynet, I'm free to mix metaphors, it's a mashup. She's the insider. She's going through the list of the people involved in the task force, and I'm thinking, she's not going to mention the smoking man. Of course she doesn't. She did, however, have some tremendous insights about the process and about stuff that really resonates. I mean, our cousins across the ditch, it's quite a similar sort of situation, I'm sure. But she talked about the fact that some senior public servants couldn't blog. I mean, I was just staggered by that. We'd expect those people to be able to get up in front of a town hall and talk for 25 minutes or so. We'd expect them to be able to engage with industry people, their sector, etc., but they can't blog? I was staggered by that. I think, if anything, I'll come back to the anachronism thing, but if anything, that struck me as being the most significant. One of the positive things that came out of it was she was talking about how the community were the key. And some of the examples that she used that I thought were really powerful were the fact that the hashtag was much more valuable than the sort of official Twitter stream. And it just goes to show you the way that community involvement can power so much more of this stuff than agencies or workforce or task force can. One of the key learnings she had was that more could have been made out of the external contributors, you know, building a system wherein you're actually empowering people to contribute rather than marginalising them. And one of the quotes I've got from her was, whatever the agenda, people want to contribute. So our job is to empower that. Stephen Boyd came on next. He came out in his dressing gown. Most public servants wear a cardigan. He came out in his dressing gown. Starts his presentation, everyone's thinking, oh yeah, we've seen this before. The dressing gown comes off and he's Rocky. He's there in his bloomers, he's shaping up, he's challenging us. He said some stuff that, I mean, I was fired up about it. And, you know, it takes me quite a bit to get fired up. But what's important about that is, you know, there are no absolutes. There is no absolute right, absolute wrong. If we continue to challenge ourselves, we'll be successful. And if we continue just to think, you know, well, this is the right way to do it, we'll believe what we all have to say, we're doomed. Lawrence came out. Lawrence and I have worked together for many years. And I was struggling with Lawrence. I was sure, what can I say without offending him? But fortunately, he handed me the golden hook where he said, you don't see many monks writing illuminated manuscripts anymore. And I was thinking, he's the guy from The Name of the Rose. And just on the illuminated manuscript thing, if you think about the person hours involved in the production of a manuscript, I'm sure some cabinet papers would come pretty close, Lawrence. One of the key things that Lawrence made the point was that we've had this policy since 2004. You know, when I started the commission, that was one of the first things that the government published. And, you know, cost, interoperability, functionality and security, nothing's changed in the in those 6 years. Why, the question we ask is, why isn't it used? Why isn't it a living document for agencies? Pia came out and threw me into some sort of self-reflexive loop because we had Dr. Evil, then we had Kung Fu Panda, and I was sitting there going, which one is it? Which one is it? It doesn't matter which one it is, but there's a lawyer from the MPIA at the back waiting to talk to you. There is no fair use. Pia, again, had terrific messages about community and about how important that is. She also had one of the gems for me was that thing about seeking meaningful outcomes. So be crystal clear about what it is you're trying to do. And other decisions, about technology or whatnot, they'll fall by the wayside. But Pia also gets the Oscar, the Academy Award, whatever the hell it is, for me, the observation of the day, which was open source geeks get one. And the reason I think that is so tremendously important is because whatever field you're involved in, you're going to interact with government in some fashion or other, whether it's just handing over your taxes or complaining about rates or whatnot. You want people who understand community. You want to be engaging with those sorts of people. That way you'll get what you need, and chances are we'll all get better results. I'm going to gloss over a little bit about the first panel for the simple reason that I am a public servant, and it would be unwise for me to comment too much about what the panellists had to say. However, there was a fantastic question from the floor, I'm not sure if he's still here, where someone asked about, is technology relevant, or is this just a gateway to the whole Babylonian thing? And I think it's a terrific question. I really do, because I firmly believe that it's not so much about technology. Technology empowers us to do stuff. Technology is driving some social change, but ultimately the decisions we make aren't really technology-based. I'll come back to that. Every film festival needs a road movie. Stephen Schmidt was that road movie. He came out and he talked about International Public Sector Learnings Repository, and I was sitting there thinking, what the hell is that? It's the Matrix. That's what it is. He wasn't Neo, he's more like Larry Fishburne, but he's still talking about the Matrix. We plug into this thing and we'll all be happy. He's called for an international working group. I say, get on it, get on board the whatever the hell that spaceship was called. Keitha and Anne, again, if Stephen was a road movie, Anne and Keitha were the highway to freedom, Thelma and Louise. That's what I was thinking. I've never seen the film. I don't know how it ends, but... Anne talked about the fact that this stuff's been codified in law since the late 19th century, and I was thinking, late 19th century? Lawrence was saying we've had this conversation for 10 or 15 years. I'm thinking, I feel like a bug trapped in amber up here. It's like, what sort of change are we going to need to see before we sort of recognise that society has changed around us and, the possibilities are literally endless. There was some interesting stuff about reusing data, obviously. NIWAS, data reuse, they start releasing stuff under Creative Commons and, surprise, surprise, more people use the data. The one thing you can say about good data or structured data is it's never going to languish. There is an appetite out there for it. So some quick observations to finish. Information, community, culture, they're the three things that I really took away from this. It's a discussion about quality, about the quality of information, the quality of relationships, and the quality of outcomes. The other thing I thought as I was just about to get up, and so this is half-formed, well, it's probably less than that, but the rest of the thing was half-formed, was that this reminded me, this whole process, a little bit like the first time I encountered Slackware. It's like government is almost like compiling software, and you find yourself in this dependency hell where it's like, oh, I just need that thing, I just need that thing, oh, no, it's not working, oh, hang on, and you just go round and round and round. So what we really need, we just need a good package manager. That's going to solve all our problems. You people are the package manager. Get to it. Have a good afternoon. Thank you.
Thanks for coming, everybody. That's it. Thank you very much, Jason.
Just before you run away, Daniel, on behalf of Linux Conference and all you people who have had a really exciting and high-blooded day in certain times, thank you for organising the BOF and the MiniConf and hopefully you'll do it again next year. Thank you.